Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hi, Paul. It's nice to be here with you at OC Talk Radio, and I'd like to welcome all our listeners to the next chapter with Charlie. You know, Paul, people often ask me, what is your podcast about? And I usually tell them something in the likes of, well, it's all about how you might take the next chapter to your life, whatever that chapter may be. And then I laugh and say, truthfully, the show really is all about whatever I feel like discussing with a given guest. And today is no exception. Today I will begin a four-week series on the most exciting subject of Advent. Pregnant pause. All recorded during the Advent season of 2019. Now, I know that Advent is not top of mind for anyone, except perhaps clergy, and I'm not even convinced of that. But I hope you find this series to be interesting, informing, and most of all, important to you personally, because it is to me. Advent is a season that is celebrated during the month of December, mostly by liturgical churches, such as Catholic, Orthodox, Episcopalian, Lutheran, Methodist, and Presbyterian. Funny thing, though, many, if not most, church attenders have little or no idea what Advent is all about, except for lighting four candles each week and ending on Christmas week. I'm sure many of you are asking, how in the world can I listen to four sessions on Advent? Well, we'll have to see how it goes, but the plan sounds really good to me. And as we talk about the coming of Jesus, the Christ, we want to talk about how he impacted our world for more than 2,000 years. For this series, I coerced my dear friend Father Robert Edwards to do four shows with me in one of the busiest seasons on the church calendar. Father Robert Edwards is a rector or lead minister of St. Margaret's Episcopal Church in San Juan Capistrano, which is my home church. So enough introduction, and with all that, let's jump in and see what comes up. First of all, I want to welcome Father Rob. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Charlie. It's good to be with you today.
It's good to be with you. I loved our chats before the show. I just hope our chats before the show are as good as our chats after the show. But my very first question is, why in the world would you agree to chat with me in four shows during one of the busiest seasons of your church year?
Yeah, well, that's going to be a whole other series, because clearly I'm not well to do such a thing, but I'm in. It was a weak moment.
I caught you at a weak moment. Yeah. You're walking out the line. Oh, by the way, I have a plan for your life.
I had a favor to ask you. Yeah.
Yeah, I've got a plan for your life. That was it. So I really do appreciate, Robert, I really do appreciate you and the time that you are giving to us. So Advent, something few people really know anything about. How would you begin to explain the season of Advent to people that have very little idea of what it is? Remember, many of my listeners are not church-going people, and they are certainly asking two questions. One, what is Advent? And number two, why should I even care, especially for 4 weeks? So let's start off with that broad question. What is Advent? And please feel free to take as long as you want to talk about Advent.
Well, I think you first have to start off with the word. Advent means coming. And so this is the coming of Christ. And so this is the beginning of the church year for the church. So we start off with Advent and then move from there. So this would be basically January 1st for us, and it comes to the first Sunday right after Thanksgiving. So it's the beginning of the church year, and it starts in darkness. It starts with nothing happening, all the world's gone crazy, and goes from there. But it is a season that's gotten lost in the past, because Christmas is such a beast that it eats up everything on both sides. It eats up Advent and also spills into Epiphany. So it's partially Christmas is complicit in Advent being lost a bit.
Oh, so tell me, what is Advent all about?
Well,
it's the coming.
Yeah, it's got an interesting history. When I first got ordained, Advent was still a very melancholy season. So it was almost like a mini Lent, and we did not do Alleluias in Advent. And the like, because it was a time where this was a time where God saw nothing else was going to work, so He had to send His Son, and knowing well that His Son was going to die, so there was always that sense of the melancholy part of the church year, and consequently, it really did take a backseat to Lent, and then about 25 years ago, the church really started rotating around and saying, this wasn't a good interpretation of Advent, and we needed to change, and so. Again, probably even 30 years ago, I remember when St. Margaret's got its first blue vestments, and we shifted from the purple, which is very penitential color, to blue, which is filled with hope. And that's really becomes the shift of Advent. It's a hopeful season. Starts in darkness, but it's about hope. When everything else is taken away, what do? We look around because God's up to something.
Yeah, we're going to spend a lot of time today on darkness, and next week we will focus more on hope and what that is. But today we're going down and dark. And you just explained to me, because I was curious, why the church doesn't place more emphasis on this season. You know, there's different colors of vestments, and for people who don't know vestments, that's robes and
Altar hangings,
yes, altar hangings, and
the color of the season.
Yeah, and you say it's now gone to blue, and all of the colors represent something, and blue is hope.
Mm-hmm.
And Lent and Easter certainly trump Advent.
Yeah,
and yet Advent is equally as important. I mean, you can't have Lent and Easter without Advent.
You can, and you can't, you know, if you think about the Christmas season, look at how much time we spend building up to it. And so the church year is really replicating that in some regard, even with the Advent wreath. We have four Sundays, and so it's a countdown to this really big day, you know, that, you know, for the church, you know, is the beginning of everything, is when, for the Christian church, is when Christ comes to the earth, it's the incarnation happens, it's a once-in-a-lifetime event.
And we have the Advent calendar.
And we have an Advent calendar, same thing.
That's for the kids, and they get chocolates.
Yeah,
or they
you can
get
do
some
that.
Kind of
and, you know, and Legos. And, you know, you go to Legoland's got one now, and the whole
oh,
deal.
Oh, do they
you know?
Really?
I mean, but all that's about that countdown. So there's an anticipation in the midst of everything else that's happening. There's definitely the sense of anticipation for that day, much like we would all anticipate a pregnancy. And that's really what we have, right, is the pregnancy of Mary.
Yeah, I've not thought of it that way. That's a perfect idea. You know, a few years back, I don't know if you remember, there was it was almost a movement that and largely by the Evangelical Church, because I was in the Evangelical Church at the time, and it was all about putting Christ back into Christmas, as if somehow the world, as they say it, had stolen Christmas from Christianity, and that movement failed because Santa Claus was definitely the winner of that war, and at least for the public at large. So what I have done personally is that during this season, I celebrate two holidays. I have Christmas, and there's the tree and the presents and the parties and the chaos. And then I also celebrate Advent, which is my more, I don't want to post myself as overly spiritual, but it's my spiritual time where I'm pondering deeper ideas. But then you had, as I explained that to you, you had some other ideas that I thought were quite fascinating.
Yeah, I think I've never really been a big, you know, put Christ back in Christmas I shouldn't say fanatic, but for me, the season replicates what happened, you know, 2,000 years ago. I mean, if you think about it, the story goes that Quirinius wanted he wanted to go ahead and have a what was the word I'm looking for?
Census.
A census, thank you. So he has a census, and all the world is thrown into upheaval. And so poor Joseph has to go back to his hometown, is scrambling and trying to put a pregnant wife on a donkey and travel through the desert. So it is a chaotic time.
There and then they hit the town, and the town has to be total chaos.
So it's just like, so for me, those days right before Christmas when you get in your car and you go to Costco and people are yelling at you and everything else and trying to get a parking spot and all the rest of that, and there's looking for that toy that you can't find and the like, is it's all part of the deal. And we get that part right. You know, I think the culture gets that part right. It is a chaotic time when the days are getting shorter and when we're scrambling around trying to get things done.
You know, nothing to do with Advent, but everything to do with Christmas. My son and I, when we're buying for his mom, my wife, when we're buying presents, she will give us a list. And we know what stores we're going to go to, and we have a list. And we do the whole thing in under 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
We have this, and we call it a MOM, Men on a Mission.
Nice.
It's Men on a Mission. We go and we take care of it. We avoid the chaos, and then we're done. It's just...
Except you and everybody else.
But everybody else is never done. They're always going back and thinking other things.
I think
if we didn't get it, it's over. You know, too late. It's over. But I like that idea. I really do like that idea that the Christmas season here does more replicate the time of Joseph and Mary in the city of Nazareth and all people coming from all over the country coming in here to take a census.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the famous line, there were no rooms at
mm-hmm.
the inn.
Mm-hmm.
There was no place to stay, so they had to stay in a barn.
Mm-hmm.
It's exactly like that today.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's and in that regard, everyone gets to participate.
Yeah, and there's somewhere hidden in that chaos, there's a spirituality that is hidden in that chaos.
Yeah, you know, and I think the same thing happened, you know, on that night. You know, there was the chaos, and then there was a time where everyone kind of goes to bed and all the rest, and then there was that silent night that we, you know, that hymn refers to. And there's that moment that everyone has at Christmas at some point. If you've gone through the season at all, maybe it's on the morning after all the presents have opened, but there's that moment of just reflection, moment of stopping. The season, the time has come, you know, the day has arrived. And there is that great place somewhere along that line where we all get to have our own silent night, if you will, at least internally.
Yeah, and it's a reflection. It's a reflection largely on relationships too,
mm-hmm.
because mm-hmm. of the family gatherings, and mm-hmm. sometimes those reflections are not quite so pretty.
And, it's all part of the deal, right?
But it is part of the deal, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd like to remind our listeners that this series on Advent will certainly concentrate primarily on the birth of Jesus, the Christ, but it's also on how he impacted the world. The teachings of Jesus have resulted in profound life lessons, perhaps more than any other I've read. His influence is stronger than any other philosopher or teacher that has ever lived. And now it's a big statement, and that's very arguable, and I won't get into an argument about it, but to say he obviously quite influential in his teaching. And in these 4 weeks, we're not just going to talk about the birth, but we're going to talk about those, I don't want to say just character qualities, but lifestyle qualities that Jesus emphasized that really impacted the world. Things like humility and hope and forgiveness and kindness, compassion. And one thing that you brought up that I really, really like is how he impacted the entirety of creation. Everything that exists is impacted by this birth and the arrival of Jesus. I want to ask you, and this is largely because you know I have probably half my listeners have a sort of churched background, and another half had one and no longer attend or never had one. And I like the idea of thinking of the notion of thinking of Jesus not read simply as a teacher, not as a savior, but simply as a teacher, as utterly poignant as Socrates. How does that strike you?
Well, there's certainly a lot of writings about Jesus, as a mystic, and he clearly was a mystic. So it lines up, and spirituality is spirituality. And in other words, you can go to any major religion or any group, and you're going to find common themes amongst all religions in terms of spirituality. So it's not a surprise that Jesus would be saying things that would be have common ground with other faiths and the like. So, I would say that if he didn't, we would have questions. I mean, he has to be able to line up with everybody else at some point, or it's not true.
And isn't it odd that people who question Christianity rarely question Jesus, except for the people who want to say he didn't exist and maybe question his deity, but they questioned the rest of Scripture. St. Paul gets questioned a whole lot more than Jesus got questioned, because Jesus was about a softness in humanity. There was still a strength, but there was a softness to it that is compelling.
Yeah, well, and Robert Capon calls it left-handed power versus right-handed power, in that sense of, that God, certainly, we understand right-handed power and how that works, but the idea of a left-handed power, which is what Jesus was talking about over and over again, is a whole different way of looking at things, and requires, as a lot of people in spirituality would say, a second look. You're not going to understand it on the first look, because it doesn't really line up with the values of the world. Consequently, Christianity would look at Jesus on the cross and say he's on a throne, where the rest of the world would say you have a poor, miserable person who's been tortured to death. So everything in Christianity comes up from this other angle, if you will.
But we don't emphasize that, do we?
No.
Especially not in the church. And perhaps that's one of the reasons that we're seeing such a decline in churches today, is that we're putting him in a false position, or in a position that's not totally in concert with the way he arrived and the way he taught.
Yeah, I think if you go back and looked at, the politics and religion were responsible for Jesus' death. And anytime Christianity lines up with politics and religion, we don't do well, and they certainly can make that case over and over and over again. But this is a person who, as you said, was constantly taking the, instead of the upward mobility, was seeking downward mobility over and over and over again.
I like that, downward mobility. I like that. I wish I had a pen and a paper, which I don't. I have my computer I could write it on. But that downward mobility is powerful, and the irony of it is, done well, it results in upward mobility.
Exactly, absolutely. It comes full circle. So consequently, when we lose our life, we gain it, according to what Jesus would say.
Yeah. And that's in our terms. You were about to say the word that I resonate with, when we lose our ego.
Absolutely.
That Richard Rohr writes so much about, absolutely, especially in that book, Falling Upward. Talks about it first and second half of life, and second half of life unfortunately doesn't begin until the last 20% of your life.
Absolutely. Yeah, and the Buddhists are really good about saying, what was your, who were you before you had a name? That we have, our ego was really arrives when we get a name and we have to start making our way through the universe. But before all that happened, we still were somebody.
I've never heard that. Now, I have to admit, to do this series, I had to do some research on Advent, because I didn't know what Advent was, other than the four candles and the birth of Christ. But I wasn't familiar with it like everybody else. So in my research, as you already pointed out, that the word Advent comes from the Latin word Adventus, which is literally translated as coming or arrival.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what we tend to focus on the arrival part at Advent or Christmas, but I discovered that there are really three comings that have to do with Advent. First is the birth or the incarnation. The second coming is not the second coming, but the second event of his coming is the coming of Jesus in our personal, corporate, and cosmic ways that he is continuing to be invasive, continuing mm-hmm. to be persuasive, and mm-hmm. and that
seeking the mangers in our heart, if you will. He's seeking a place to be born over and over and over again.
God, that's why you're a preacher. You know, I just there's times when we talk that I go quiet because you set my mind off to thinking. Mm. Now, there's a third one, and that is part of Advent is definitely looking forward to the second coming of Christ, mm-hmm. which is the end of days, the end of times, and all's going to be well and good. So are you familiar with it? Do you buy into that three comings kind of concept?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, certainly there'd be historical models, the first one. The second one would be, you know, the over and over again experience we can have of Christ being born within us, if you will. And then that third part is interesting because there is a sense of the, you know, the second coming, but there's also that great spot you remember in Luke where Jesus says, you know, I'm not going to drink of this cup until the kingdom comes. And then he picks up the cup after Eucharist, and he drinks it. So the second coming is already in our midst in that regard. So I think there is a perhaps a, you know, historical second coming, but the second coming is happening every time we celebrate Advent over and over and over again. We're looking around for how is God going to surprise us next? And it's always going to be in a way that we least expect it. You know, that Nazareth is that place that is well off the beaten track. And so it's a time for us to really be alert. You know, to wake up. You know, there's a great statement in the scriptures that says, "Wake up!" You know, this is it. You know, there's one hymn he actually remembers: "Sleepers, wake!" You know, we have to come out of our trance, if you will, and look around at what God is doing.
That it's so important, and I think that's really the direction we're going to take. I'm going to take. We've sort of talked theologically and sort of heady stuff so far. Now I want to get practical. I want to get to where we're talking to everybody. We're talking about mm-hmm. to those of faith and to those who have other traditions in their life or other things in their life. But before we do that, we need to take a quick break. Hi there, I'm Charlie Hedges, and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie, and I have a dear friend, special guest, Father Robert Edwards, who is rector of St. Margaret's Episcopal Church in San Juan Capistrano. That's my home church, and we are talking during the Advent season, and this is, will air in 2019, the week before week one, so to give people an opportunity to ponder about what's coming up each week rather than doing it during that week. And we've just sort of described Advent, of what it's all about and why it has sort of taken backseat to Lent and Easter for the liturgical churches, and a backseat to Easter for the more Protestant churches and evangelical churches. One thing I noticed, Robert, is that Advent, as I've looked at it and studied it a bit, is a weird season in that it is not only about celebration. We're thinking celebrating the birth of the Christ, but there is an almost Lenten penitential aspect of lamentation for the state of the world that brought God to send his Son to reconcile all creation. The scriptures say that of the birth of Jesus, that out of the darkness came light. Now, we've had some pretty deep conversations about darkness, and I think darkness in life is essential, and it brings about the change and the character and the lifestyle that we want. How do you interpret the use of "into the darkness came light"?
It's a good question, and I think it's one we're not really we don't gravitate towards darkness, you know. And yet, if you think about it, all of life comes out of darkness. A seed is put in the ground; it's dark. A baby is born, comes out of a dark womb. So, darkness is a really important concept and an important theme for all of spirituality. And it's a beginning point. And so I think we talked a little bit about, you know, the beauty of a daylight sky is that the stars are all up in the sky. We can see, you know, there we can't see them because we don't have the darkness to be able to reveal them to us. So Advent's a time to really take a positive view of darkness, if you will, and live with it for a bit as compared to rejecting it, which we tend to be, you know, prone to do.
Yeah, that metaphor when you told me, as we were sitting over at the club, and you told me that during the day the stars are out, but it takes a darkness to see them. I've never heard that metaphor, and I think that's a powerful metaphor, because I think that's about our life.
Yeah,
there are so many parts of our character, and our development. You know, our lifestyle development depends on darkness in order to even not only to see light, but to want light, to desire it.
Absolutely. You know, and if you think about it, the you know, it's the one thing that the ego doesn't really want to confront is the whole point of darkness, because it has no control over it. And so darkness, when we're in darkness, the only thing you can really do is wait for it to clear, if you will. So there's a place of being utterly helpless in darkness, but we learn over and over again in the church that these are the times where God is up to something. So, for instance, I think we talked a little bit about the Easter story begins in John's Gospel. While it was still dark, Mary was at the tomb, and that's where we begin Easter. So Advent really is a time to reiterate that theme that when we're in the middle of darkness, something is about ready to happen, and it doesn't take much. And so we have this great story of in a small little backwater town in the middle of nowhere, God comes in the darkness of the night when there's no hope and no sense of any reason for hope, and there it is. And so in our faith, whenever we bump into moments where things are, we're all lost, there's a great opportunity for us over and over again to begin to look around. That's what Advent tells us, is look around, wake up.
Yeah. And, but there is the irony of it taking the darkness to see it.
Absolutely.
And yeah. In the darkness, I see the darkness as those are my character flaws.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the mistakes that I have made. Those are the troubles that I am facing, maybe through no fault of my own, but those are still troubles. And it is out of that, I mean, it is so popular. How many books are written now on the advantage of failure and mistakes?
Mm-hmm. No.
That's the way we really learn, is through failures and mistakes. But you had mentioned to me the heart of spirituality depends upon darkness.
Yeah, you know, in any faith, they, you know, there's that great statement that all religions began in the desert because they begin in emptiness, and it has, you have to have that sense of emptiness before you would want to, you know, gravitate towards anything. So it's out of darkness and out of that space of not knowing what's next that we begin to open our minds up and our hearts up to possibilities, because if everything's been taken off of the menu, if you will, then we don't know where to turn, and that begins that there's a sacred moment of wondering, if you will, if we don't know what's going to happen next, if there's no place for us to turn, and that's what makes, you know, the darkness part or the unknown part so primeval.
When you say emptiness, talk about that to me a bit, because I think I know spiritually what that means, but It is a word that is packed full of meaning.
Yeah, I always like Meister Eckhart's got that great line that all of spirituality is about subtraction, not addition. You know, is that we need to strip away before we can. We have to take away before we can find. And so I think that you know, so whether while we might not be prone to pursue darkness, when it is thrust upon us, we don't really have much of a choice. And I think that's the space where if we're willing to sit with it, things, you know, something good's going to come out of it. But we have to be willing to stay there and to not just tolerate emptiness, but to welcome it, to be okay with it. And we live in a world where, if you think about it, we don't really do that very much. We have, you know, all kinds of things to keep us active and to keep us.
Oh my goodness!
You know, and so this season, if you think about it, flies contrary to what we think about how we're to live our lives, and yet it's essential.
Yeah, I agree that is that emptiness that. Sort of lostness and sitting with it. And you say we don't do it actively, but there is one way that I found that I actively do it, and I have begun. I quit for 6 to 8 months. I quit meditating, you know, and I had meditated daily for a couple of years, and I've started once again, and oh my goodness, you know, something about that stopping it and starting it all over again. And that is, you're actually seeking a place of emptiness.
Absolutely.
You're seeking a place of quiet, and I'm on a session right now where the guide is taking us to, whenever we get a thought, we just say thought, note it, and let it go away, and go back to this empty place of breathing and relaxation, and the other things that are involved in meditation. But I find that I come out of that, it is almost purposeless. You know, is not, you know, I'm not coming out with any revelation, any idea, but I'm coming out ready, sort of anticipatory.
Yeah. Isn't it Anne Lamott? I think it's got that great quote about, you know, every device we have has a reset button, you know, that you push and shut the thing down and start over. And it seems to me that's, you know, that when our electronic devices just, you know, or shoot themselves in the foot, that's what we do, right? And
we,
if you think about it,
the computer.
We reboot it, right? And this is the same thing. You know, at the end of the year, at the end of the day, and this is a rebooting. This is a starting over of another year in which we're willing to go back and let everything just be taken off the table and begin again.
These are ancient truths. Darkness and light are ancient truths. How do you see, now I'm going to get political, how do you see darkness and emptiness as a source of showing us, of giving us a glimpse of light? How do you see that helping us in the world that we live in today, especially the political world that we live in today? What can we do for stillness and darkness and the ability to see light in this crazy world that all of us are just kind of going nuts wondering, are we going to survive this?
Yeah, you know, it's these are trying times. I mean, they're ones I see at my congregation and the like, and it's I think if I woke up tomorrow and someone told me this was I've been dreaming, I would believe it. But I think part of the thing is we can look back and say that this is not the first time. You know, we've been here before. You know, we'll be here again. This is there's really nothing new under the sun, if you will. So. So I think that I take great solace in the fact that this is the kind of faith we have that doesn't rely on everything going perfectly well and the like, and there will be a way out of it. And so it's a long view, I think, that Advent offers us in a time like this, that we've been here and we'll be here again.
Now that's a really excellent insight. It is Advent, and what it's all about is the long view.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the short view.
No.
And character development is a long view.
It is. It is. And we know that this will, it will pass, and we will come out of this better. But it's not going to be, it's not going to happen overnight, if you will.
No, it's not. And it fits all of the metaphors that we've talked about, the chaos in Nazareth to the darkness, to stillness, all really apply, because we are at a time where really nobody except for the radical left and the radical right see an end to it, see a positive end to it.
Hmm.
You know, we just see it's going to end up worse, mm-hmm. no matter what. Mm-hmm. It's not getting better. But those are, you're suggesting, if I'm understanding it right, that those are actually healthy times for us to reevaluate who we are, what we're all about.
Yeah, I think over and over again, if we look at the situation, that history would tell us, and especially Advent tells us, that God is still at work. And so the key is, as it gets darker and darker, is to begin to look around and see where that is happening. But it is happening. Advent says that no matter how dark it gets, we know that God is up to something. And so I think that I take great solace in that at a time like this, is that, I mean, we know that God is up to something. And so, to your point, it might not be the first thing we see, because you do need some emptiness and some quietness, and it does require even more, I think, contemplation to be able to see what God is doing, because it's not going to be obvious.
Yes, that really is true, and it really is true that God really does seem to respond after longer periods of upheaval and disheveled and hopelessness, when we feel like there's nowhere else to turn. And so I was at a board meeting one time, and somebody says, okay, well, it's time to pray. And another person said, it's come to that, huh?
Right. I remember there, John McCory one time wrote something about the Holocaust, and he said, if you ever went through a nuclear Holocaust, what we would do as a Christian person was begin to look for a flower. You know, that over and over again, we just know that this is what happens. We go through dark times, and there will always be resurrection out of dark times, or always be birth out of times when things are grim. And so it's, and it will come in unlikely corners and unlikely places. The fact that a child born in Nazareth was going to have the impact he had, no one would have predicted that back in those days.
Yeah. And your analogy to looking for a flower, I don't think that's exclusive or limited to the Christian. I think it's all people seeking spirituality.
Absolutely.
Seeking that have a glimmer of hope in their life. They have not lost that. And we are not going to talk about that next week, but the week after,
mm-hmm.
we are going to talk about hope and the importance of hope in the midst of darkness and chaos. Well, Robert, that's all I have for today. unless you have words that I haven't asked you.
I think we're in good shape. It's a good start. We got a lot more to cover.
Yeah, Advent. I still can't, folks. I can't believe I'm doing 4 weeks on Advent. But
neither can I.
and not only can you not believe it, I get the feeling you're not really excited about it. But you are so
in.
You are so good. When we talk theology and spirituality, I know of no one else I'd rather talk to than you.
You're very kind.
Well, you're a very good man. So as we close out today, I'd like to promote our next episode, which will be on the power of humility. And that there is, they may sound like oxymorons, power and humility, but there is a power in humility. And that it's the meek will inherit the earth. And how Jesus' teachings of humility were adopted by the likes of Gandhi and Dr. Martin Luther King, and you see the impacts they made on the world. Mm-hmm. And we will talk about humility next week. So, Father Rob, thank you so much for spending time with me.
It's a great day.
I'm looking forward to our next show with you, and I also want to thank all our listeners for tuning in to the next chapter with Charlie, and be sure to check us out at our website, thenextchapter.life. And until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.